Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Daniel Wilcox. Hi, folks.
What episode is this? Like episode 45 or something? I feel like we're getting towards 50.
Yeah, we're closing in on that gap, which is kind of nuts, really, because what's that? Just over a year.
Is it like a year and a half now? Is it? When did we start? What episode is it?
43.
Okay, cool. So we figured we'd try something different then, I guess. We've been doing the same sort of interview format, and when you do the same thing a few too many times, it starts to get a little bit routine. So we thought we'd mix it up a bit, get ourselves on our toes and all that. So
shake the cocktail shaker.
Yeah. I'm a little bit nervous because Dan's got so what's the format? This is your sort of idea, right? So you've got a question.
So it's more rather than us chatting and just talking about the things that we love because we're really self-indulgent and narcissistic. it's more general discussion topics. So if there's these episodes where we don't have a guest on, which they're rare, but they happen, we will just throw a discussion topic into the air and we will just talk about that one specific one, so then people listening are a bit more attuned into what the episode is going to be about as opposed to some of the ramblings of two UK guys.
And you know the question because it's your question this week. So I have no idea, so if I sound like a bumbling idiot, that's probably that's one.
Do you not work well in the hot seat?
Well, I have no idea, this is the first time I've done it.
Has anyone ever interviewed you? Yeah, of course they have. I've heard them.
Yeah. What, twice, I think, maybe?
Yeah.
What was it? When have you heard it? What episode?
Oh, it was a year ago. Well over a year ago, I think. I can't remember which podcast it was on.
Yeah.
It's some American guy. You were talking about the hipster books.
Yeah. Is that we're talking about depression and stuff? I think they've stopped doing that now. It's a Sunday morning coffee podcast or something like that.
So it wasn't American, was it?
No, he's Canadian.
Yeah.
Cool, man. All right. So before we get into all that stuff, how's the writing going?
It's going well, actually. I started a new book last week.
Yeah.
So
can you talk about it yet? Much like.
Yeah, I can talk about it. So I think we briefly mentioned it on the podcast a little while ago that I'm doing a book in the Michael Anderley world, the Catherine Gambit series, and they're basically expanding. They've expanded the universes of the beginning part of Vamps and Wares and everything that's going on. Huge gap. And then they go into almost like a fantasy realm. And C.M. Raymond, Elie Barban, and loads of others are kind of killing it in the age of what they're calling the age of magic at the minute. And I'm writing in the age of madness, which is the gap that kind of bridges the two, alongside Hayley Lawson and a few others as well. But yeah, I officially started that book last week. Put my fingers to the keyboard on Thursday. Been tapping away and getting through that. Been a bit ill this weekend, so I have taken a gap already.
well, it happens. So, how are you finding the first draft writing? Because it's been a while since you've been first drafting, right?
Yeah. It feels good, actually, when you get a flow. It feels very unnatural to start, though. It's that whole heaviness of making the beginning.
Yeah.
That big breath before you dive in.
I've come to think of it as the flinch. You know, like, because, like, it's before you get into a cold shower or, like, into any sort of water, you go, there's a whole, like, flinch. Or, like, when you're, like, have you been, like, what are they called? Like, dunk pools or something? So you don't just, like, jump straight in, although that's the best thing to do, probably.
Oh, I do.
Sometimes, like, there's a whole thing of, like, do you know what I mean? Like, just before, there's that whole, like,
I do that before I check my bank balance. But yeah, it was good to just get down because it's a bit of a different writing style to what I'm used to. But it's quite fun to play with the characters I'm excited to bring to life. And it's just exciting having that beginning intro part to bring them alive and see what happens. I mean, I have no doubt that I'll have to go back and edit at some point, but I am just letting myself write for the minute.
Yeah, and not to, I don't want to sort of ask this and have it suddenly play on your mind, but because there is an audience there, like quite a big audience, is that on your mind currently in the writing?
I'm pushing it away for now.
Good. Yeah, forget about it. Forget I even asked it. I'm just curious. Give you some sort of existential crisis there. But
I mean, to be fair, whenever I write my stories, whenever I write my first drafts or anything, I normally try and when you're in a room writing by yourself, it's hard to feel the audience.
Yeah.
You are your own worst critic. And I think I spent more time battling my own head than I would worrying too much at this point. But I'm sure that will come some way down the line because it is a bit of a different project for me. But it's going good. Diving in and trying to get my writing speed back up again.
Yeah. How many words are you doing a day?
So I'm gunning for 2,000.
Okay.
Which is quite a big ask on top of work and everything else. But, you know, I did it for Lazarus. I did it for Elements of They Remain.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But
cool.
How's your writing going? Did we speak about Nano Boozmo last week or last time?
I don't remember. So I did Nano Boozmo. If people don't know, that's NaNoWriMo. But I added a couple more elements because I've done NaNoWriMo twice now. And any of these sort of challenges, the one of the reasons they work is because you're not sure if you can do it. Do you know what I mean? There needs to be an element of it might be too difficult, so you better try. So Nano Boozmo was 50,000 words, and I was going to add a running element, so run 50,000 meters, so run 50K, and then no booze, because I wanted an excuse not to drink. So I did it. I think I wrote 50,018 words in the 30 days, ran about 62,000 meters, which sort of killed me in the end, and no booze. And you know what? I had a beer on the first. I went to a film. we were screening Keith, and I had one beer, had like half of it, and I was like loopy. The bubbles went straight to my brain.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's amazing how much that can impact you when you've not drunk anything in a while.
Yeah, yeah. It was nice though. I really enjoyed actually. So I was kind of still a bit tired and sort of like in a bit of like a mental fugue, and so I sat down in the bar waiting for the thing to start, and I had my beer, and I was gonna get a book out and read. I had like 20 minutes. I was gonna do something to pass away the time, listen to a podcast, do something productive. But I just sat there and listened to like the jazzy music sort of in the background, and just had a really relaxing, enjoying beer. And you don't really do that very often, just enjoy the ambiance.
No, I'm trying to do that more with just putting my phone down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're standing at the post office, don't need to check your fucking texts. Come on. Just speak to the random batty lady that's spewing off the lyrics to some old poem from the 70s.
Well, yeah. So when I'm walking in Alaska, a lot of the time I'll have a podcast in, and it kind of ruins the walk in a way. Like, I enjoy the podcast, but I'm not really in the moment with the dog and enjoying the atmosphere or anything. But so there's a couple of times I still take. So it's a good excuse to listen to something, but every now and again I just go out and just enjoy walking around, get some fresh air.
Yeah, it's good for you. I mean, I do the same. I cycle to and from work, which is like 20 minutes for me each way. and I'll listen to a podcast. And then sometimes I'll just be like, I've had a long day at work. I'll listen to a podcast in the morning, and on the way home, I'll just go, nothing. But you don't realize how much. I think we've briefly spoken about this back in March when I went on my social media.
Cleanse.
But even going to the toilet, you don't realize how boring going to the toilet is without your phone.
Yeah.
But I plan at some point when I can be bothered to put nails in the walls of putting tiny little bags around the house so that I can, if I'm going to the toilet and there's a bag outside, I just
what are you putting in the bag?
I just pop my phone in it, then samples. Go in the toilet. And then just remove any element of temptation to actually go on your phone, because
that's good.
Family occasions when everyone's sat on their phone really pisses me off.
But I've got to the point now where, although I don't do this every time, if it's the evening, you know, if it's just me and Kat and we're doing something, I just try to put the phone away, just not get it out, because it's just so easy just to swipe down on Facebook or Twitter over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, so what the fuck am I doing?
I'll get to my 20th scroll on my Instagram feed to the point I'm caught up with where I was 3 hours ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. You're better than this.
Cool, man. So big whoops.
Cool.
Have you got one in mind?
I do. Do you?
I do, yeah. I've got two, actually. A small one and a big one. A
couple of samples. I do a small one. I'll do one. Okay, cool. And then you can put the big one in the back.
So the smaller one, I guess, is just one that a little thing I've enjoyed on the internet recently was, it's called Dan's Top 5 Reads of 2017. So you put a blog post up on our website, hoggleaver.com. It's like your favorite 5 reads of the year. And it was just interesting to see it's interesting to see 3 out of 5 books are indie books that you chose. It's just interesting to see what's sort of been in your mind space over this past year, what sort of affected you in that way. And it was a good, and I'm looking forward to doing my own now. I picked the 5 books.
You pop one up. Okay.
Yeah.
I think for me, partly a few of them, it was because we've had some of the authors on the show. So knowing people and then reading their work and being impressed with their work kind of doubles the value for me. But yeah, there are a couple on there that just fantastic books, ones that I should have gotten around to a long time ago, but didn't, just enjoy. And I found that I'm trying now to read a lot more of people that I don't ever read or haven't heard of.
Yeah.
Just to absorb those styles, because there's only so much Stephen King that you can read.
Yeah. Well, some people just, that's all they read.
That's it. It's on cycles for years.
Yeah. I get so excited now by I keep seeing the same books recommended on Instagram or on Goodreads, and I just get so excited to get around to it. There's so many like cool books that I just really want to read, but you know, there's so much time.
So my big whoop, I'm going to go for I'm going to go for a book, which is the How to Be Fucking Awesome by Dan Meredith. Why not throw that out there? Because I think I'm trying to remember if last time I mentioned this. It feels like forever ago since we recorded one of these, but it was only about 2 weeks ago. I've been listening to a lot of wellness, motivation podcasts, been reading some non-fictiony things to basically try and I'm experimenting at the minute with my sleep and trying to make myself sleep better. I'm experimenting with food and trying to make myself eat better.
When you say sleep, so what are you doing? Like upside down?
Upside down. I normally go for pants on the head just because it's warmer and it closes in that breath when you sleep. It's things like blue light filters. It's things like cutting off certain technologies before bed. The foods and drinks that you have before bed, and just test, because I'm not 100% convinced that my sleep is effective, because I keep waking up tired, and I know that I fit a lot into my day, but I also know that there must be a way.
How many hours do you sleep?
6.5 to 7. So
I'll just need the extra hour. You might just need the full 8.
Yeah, so I'll plug this as well. I've downloaded an app this week called Sleep, which is basically a big logo of a sheep. And in that, you can actually take a sleep quality test, which asks you questions like how long do you think you sleep? What do you do before bed? Do you ever wake up feeling awake? All this other stuff. And that actually did recommend that I should be getting 7.8 hours of sleep a day.
Yeah.
So I am getting an hour less than that. So I'm trying to work that together and see if that makes kind of a difference. Yeah. But yeah, along those lines, been reading How to Be Fucking Awesome. And the reason I read it was because it was a violent red front cover with a silhouette of a big bearded man. And it's just, it was called How to Be Fucking Awesome. So
is it, I doubt grow a beard. Step one, grow a beard.
It was. I can't. So I failed. I think I can grow a beard.
Yeah, you
I
just can. Think, I'm sure you can.
I think it'll be wispy like a ginger cloud.
But like caramel. Little strands of it. Yeah.
Like cotton candy. But yeah, it was 12 key points on how to be awesome, which are basically the stuff that you get in a lot of other motivational nonfiction books. It was all stuff like be selfish, surround yourself with people who you aspire to be. It's the whole you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with, and all this other stuff. But it was really just authentic and raw. And he says at the beginning of the book that he basically just sat down for 2 weeks and just wrote it just because he fancied doing it at the time and then moved on to other things. But
is he like a self-help coach type person, or is he
A little bit of that, a little bit of a copywriter for fitness things. Just an entrepreneur, I think, in general. But
digital
entrepreneur.
I bet he's a digital nomad as well. Does he have a flat in Thailand?
He didn't say.
Oh, okay.
So
just in a similar vein, the best book I've read like that for a long time was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. It's kind of like anti self-help advice, but it does touch upon a lot of the same kind of key areas, but it's kind of like always takes a slightly different approach to it, and I definitely recommend it. It's a lot of just common sense, to be honest. Like most of them are, but that one is definitely one of the better ones I've read in a long time.
Why?
I can't tell exactly. I think I'm pretty sure it's probably just maybe how sort of blatant he was in the advice and sort of not. There's some points where he talks about like positive thinking, how that's a bad thing, and like so all these sort of like things that people will always tell you in these self-help books. A lot of them he will say, "Don't do that. This is why that's actually going to be negative in the long run." He sort of subverts a lot of things. I'm all for subversion. So, yeah, but I definitely recommend it. It's really good.
Okay, I'll see if I can find it. Cool. What's your big whoop?
Well, I guess so. It's a book. I bought it on the off chance that I would enjoy it. It's called In the River by Jeremy Robert Johnson.
Every book?
Yeah. So this book, it's a novella, really. It's about 140 pages or so. But Jeremy Robert Johnson is kind of revered in the sort of small press horror community. A lot of them kind of feel like he should be a bigger name than he actually is. He's got blurbs from Jack Ketchum and Chuck Palahniuk and all these kind of people, Stephen Graham Jones. His last book was a short story collection, and Blumhouse adapted one of his short stories into a short film, and it's called When Sorcerer Stirs. And I watched that and I was like, this is insane. Like he's got like a really bizarro, absurd sort of approach to everything. But there's a new book, a new novella. It's called In the River. I had no idea what it was about. I just thought I'd give it a go, take a punt. And it's in my top five now of the year. It's a mix between The Road and Apocalypto. Like it's like a sort of small tribe, but you don't really, it's about a man and a son, and the son gets attacked by this thing in the river, and it's about the man trying to save his son and get him back. And it's really brutal, like incredibly brutal, incredibly horrific. Like there's some lines in it later on that are just, there's one sentence that just stuck with me for about 3 days, and I just couldn't stop thinking about how disgusting it was. Like, you know, when it's like a turn of phrase suddenly like catches you in the right way. It was, just like that. It's all about like parents struggling with the loss of children. So I don't know, you know, for some people that might affect them a little bit more. I imagine it'd be a difficult read for some people, maybe like yourself because you've got a kid. But in terms of like just a surprising, wow, this isn't like a massive author. He's only got like 50 reviews on his like some of his books on Goodreads. So I would say that as a gauge of sort of how many people are reading the books. So he's massively underread for how good this book is.
And what's his name?
Jeremy Robert Johnson.
Jeremy Robert Johnson. I should be checking him out.
Yeah. Cool, man. Fantastic. Okay, so big groups are out of the way. The writing updates are out of the way. This question, this topic, what are we going for?
It's an attempt at a drum roll. So let's have a discussion. Obviously, I can also talk about this for myself as well.
Yeah.
But what are the three top things that you'll take with you in your writing from 2017 into the new year?
Oh, wow. Okay. So the three top things I would take with me.
So what is it this year that has pulled you in just that right way, has tickled you back, has got your noggin wearing that you thought this is a game changer?
Well, I think one of the main things I think is I've kind of settled in the sense of, I feel like before I was always sort of, last year I was always searching for the book that's going to make a bit of money. I think since I talked with Keelan,
yes,
it's kind of just calmed me down on that. And I've kind of realized, look, like I'm comfortable. I don't have a shit ton of money or anything, but I'm only really happy when I'm working on stuff that I'm really excited to work on. And sometimes that is like more commercial stuff. Like I love working on the rock books and Lazarus and that kind of thing. But sometimes it means just, you know, writing something absurd or like just like something that's like you can't stop thinking about. So for this one, the example I'm thinking of is the Frio, which is kind of a bit more of a straight horror. It's not really commercial, I don't think so. But it's just something that's been playing in my mind for a long time and I just really wanted to write it. And I'm comfortable in that. And I kind of feel like as long as I'm working on projects that I really like, sometimes they'll be commercial, sometimes they won't. I feel like that is more important to me and my sense of my ego, I guess, than working on books that I'm working on stuff that I might not be as big of a fan of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which I can kind of fully appreciate. I mean, we sat down together, wasn't it, about, I want to say last July when we started looking at The Rot and looking at something more commercial and putting Lazarus into place. And even in the months that followed when we were looking at the next set of edits or publishing or whatnot.
Yeah.
I remember around then it was all very much, this is the focus, these are the books that we want to push.
Yeah.
And obviously there's still work to do on the Rot series, but I am the same in that I felt, even though we were pushing on them, there was always that little part of you that was like, I just want to do this thing over here. And you were like, no, bring it back.
Yeah.
So it was quite nice from my side actually to see you dive into the 3-0 and just to kind of go, right, this is a thing that I want to do. I'm doing this for me.
Yeah. I think it's right. And then it sort of just went longer and longer. Yeah.
But I think those are the moments that make writing enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think once you've worked out that, hold on, I've got more story to tell. Hold on, that there's that it's just you're writing because you want to. That it's there. Like I feel like as much as I wanted to write Lazarus and as much as I wanted to write The Rot, the more and more we looked at commercial fiction, there was that part of me which, again, after that conversation with Keelan where he broke me down and made me cry, you start to kind of.
It's a couple of episodes back if people want to hear that.
you have to take that step back and you have to think about what you're doing. I mean, I've put on the top of my one as well that it's kind of in a similar vein to your first point. It's just know your goals, know what it is that you want.
Know your why. So, I guess that phrase, although it gets oversaid nowadays, it does make a lot of sense. Like you really just have to know yourself and know what you want to get out of writing. For me, it is enjoyment for a lot of it, but also I feel like there is money to be made in the sense of I'd like to do it full time. But at the same time, just sort of knowing what you want to get out of it and not like floating about to the whim of the universe. You know what I mean? Like on the market or whatever. Just being a bit more self-assured and sure-footed in what you're doing and this kind of stories you want to tell. I mean, a lot of times I like commercial fiction. So in fact, I read 90% of what I read is commercial fiction. So it's going to come out that way anyway.
Sorry, my mind's just completely blanked.
That's cool. Are you thinking about the Keelan episode?
I am. He made me cry. I didn't actually cry. But yeah, I'll just expand to my side a little bit more. Like I say, it's a similar vein of yours, knowing your goals in that. I mean, we're long past that point where, or I think we are, where we hop from just story idea to story idea to story idea, write the intro, but never really make a commitment.
Yeah.
I think especially this year, for me, I know that I've gotten good at going, okay, if I give myself a deadline, I can hit it.
Yeah.
And after, similarly to you, where you're kind of taking a bit more time to do some of these more passionate projects, I know that I want to dive into this project with Michael Anderley because I know that long term it's obviously a fantastic thing to be involved in, and I'm excited with the characters and the story and everything else to get being involved, but ultimately it will serve in the long term and almost give that kind of step up into the longer hand goals, because I'm similar to you in that I've got those ideas, and 2-3 weeks ago I started writing a novella, which was just a passion project, but you know, I've got a kid to feed, I've got a house that I need to pay for, and there's only so much under my circumstances where I can hold back.
Yeah.
So I now know in writing this, I've made that decision, it's a conscious thing, and I feel good about pursuing that and going forth.
Yeah.
And the minute I think you set what your end goal is, or you know what it is that you want to achieve from whatever you're writing, the easier it is to put aside the other stuff until you finish that project.
Yeah, so I mean, also, when you do make that decision, you find your anchor point or whatever it is, and you sort of make the decision and sort of start working just on that one project, and all the other stuff sort of goes away for the time being. You just think, I'll deal with that when I get the chance to deal with it. Your life becomes so much easier. I don't know what it is. There's something about just focusing on one project.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's been mentioned on this one yet, but for those folks who didn't know, Cypher, my Kickstarter, didn't quite reach its target, to which, you know, I was a little bit gutted about, but ultimately along this vein, it does also mean that I now don't have to split my time.
Yeah.
So I can just focus and go, this is what I'm going to do, as opposed to kind of going, I'm going to do this alongside delivering for the Kickstarter audience.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean to say that it's not going to make a comeback, because I'm not done yet.
Yeah, we'll find a way to relaunch it and in the new year, probably.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Okay, so...
That's number one.
Number one. Okay, number two. So I was just... I guess I was just totting up my word counts for the year, and I don't want to try and get another 30k in this year if possible. I'm going to... And this is including co-written stuff. I think I would have written about 250,000 words, which like it is a lot, and is a fair bit, but nowhere near as much as what you know, some of these indie publishers who are writing and publishing a book a month. Like it's not even half of what they're doing. But I've kind of realized that's fine. I'm just not as fast. I kind of feel like it's a metabolism thing. Like some people can eat as much as you want and like they will stay the same weight, but for me, I need to take my time a little bit and sort of you know, read some good books, watch some films, get my ideas flowing again, and I just need that sort of extra bit of time. So I do feel like I think there was a period maybe about just before Nano Boozmo when I was like, I'm kind of like feeling a bit lost, like I don't know what projects I should work on. I feel like I'm behind where I should be. And then I just started, and as I said to myself, just do 1,000 words a day. It's not a big amount. Just do 1,000 words a day. And I found that fairly easy. And then from there, I was able to sort of like ramp up a little bit to 2,000 words a day. But I just need to kind of remind myself every now and again, look, just slow down a little bit. Just chill. Just make sure you're like moving in the right direction, but just chill.
That's what burnout is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's okay to take a break sometimes.
Yeah,
I always, I don't know about you, I always feel immensely guilty if there's a day where I'm like, oh, I will just take today off because I do feel like crap.
Yeah,
I do immediately feel really guilty for that.
Yeah, you got to like, forgive yourself for those moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, like the past 2 weeks, so I finished Nano Boozmo, and the past 2 weeks
should it not be called Nano Sabermo.
Well, I had I think it was. National Nano Rimo Run Mo No Booze Mo. It was a really long one I had, but Nana Boozma just kind of, I don't know, the no booze thing in the middle just kind of stands out to me. So I had like, I was like, right, I finished Nana Boozma, and then the next day I'll start writing the rest of Their Ruin. I'll go straight onto it, but I was like, I can't.
No.
I just felt ill. I felt like I just need to lie down. And I think for the first couple of days, I think I did just go home and went to bed about 8 o'clock and just sort of recovered a bit.
What's your normal bedtime?
Try and make it about 10 o'clock, but the past week or so, it's been more like 11, half 11-ish or something, yeah.
Not fair. And you're still getting up in time to write?
No, like, so the after Nana Boozma, like, my body was like, just stay in bed for as long as possible. Leave it to the last moment before you need to get up and get ready to go to work. But I think I'm feeling a lot better now, so I think tomorrow I'll get up about 5-ish or something.
See, I don't know if I buy into the whole...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Like, if you sleep, if you barely sleep, say 4 hours one night, that there's that extra bit you have to make up for.
Let's catch up on it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I buy into that.
I think maybe there's like a little bit of a deficit, but it's like REM sleep that you need, isn't it? So polyphasic sleeping, which is a 20-minute nap every 4 hours. So the total amount of sleep. So people do this. The guy who made WordPress, he was polyphasic for a year. The way that works... So you're only getting 2 hours total sleep every night, but because you're kind of tired by the time the 4 hours comes up and you have to have your nap time, like, you go straight into REM sleep. So the total amount of REM sleep you're getting is just the same as the total REM sleep of someone who sleeps 8 hours a night, because they only go for a couple of hours properly resting in the night. So if you have it, some point is, yeah. But then again, I've done something similar, and I was like, I'm bored. I could write, but I don't really want to at the minute. I think the point is, if you only get 4 hours sleep one night, you're probably only missing 20 minutes REM sleep or something, but you might just need a nap the next day or something to just sort of catch up.
Yeah, I find naps hard, but...
You ever had a coffee nap?
A coffee nap?
Yeah, so you... have a espresso or something, like a bit of a strong coffee. Just have a little nap straight afterwards. And by the time you wake up, like 20 minutes later...
Hit your system.
The caffeine's like, what? Like, you're straight in there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good to go. Yeah.
So are you setting like a yearly word count for next year? Are you setting a target for yourself?
I don't know about word count, because there's other things I want to do that aren't prose based. So I think what I'd like to finish The Ruin, get that out there. El Marvo issue 2. I want to get key film done, like at least like the first edit of it anyway. And then I definitely want to write at least 2 more novels. That sounds like a lot, but maybe in the Velos, I don't know. But it's going to be different compared to you because you're doing the whole Michael Andelay sort of 12 novels in a day sort of.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think, yeah. I don't know if I will be up there with the fastest of them, but I'll certainly give it a stab to at least get the ball rolling and see how it goes out. Because I think it'll be a bit of a challenge because I, on top of, like I say, all this podcasts and books and stuff, I'm trying to optimize myself anyway. And I've been doing a lot of, I'm straight now a purist on Pomodoro in that I used to come down when I wrote the first draft of Lazarus. I was very much my hour lunch break, I'd sit and I'd write for an hour in the morning, I'd write for 45 minutes to an hour, whatever I had. But I don't know why at the minute my mind is just like over here, over here, over here. So I like those pockets of time where you can just go, right, timer, go.
Kind of freeing, aren't they?
Yeah,
like word counts. Focus is like any kind of focusing moment is just a really freeing break from the rest of the day.
Yeah, and I was doing the hour and probably getting between 800 to 1200 words, depending on what I was kind of going for. But at the minute, I'm doing 2 20-minute pomos, and I'm averaging about 700 words per pomo.
Lucky you got used to it, it's pomo. I say pom. Spend pom. Pom. Yeah, I'll spend a couple of poms on that book, and then I'll do a pom on something else.
But, I popped a pom.
Popped a pom.
It was
gross. Okay, so but, number two, I guess the point there was maybe pace yourself is the right way to phrase it, or maybe recognizing it's a marathon. And although I do like sprints, like it is a longer race.
It's less daunting now to do a novel.
Yeah. Yeah, nowadays I'm not like kind of worried about doing a novel. I just want to do a fucking good novel. Do you know what I mean? I want to surprise myself at like if I can do an idea or something that I didn't know I could be able to do, or like a character dynamic or something.
Yeah. I think mine, I'll go with forget your audience.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a...
Who are you again? Selective amnesia. I like it.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't mean that in like, obviously we've written books that we plan to be commercial. I think sometimes you can get weighed down, and obviously we briefly mentioned it earlier with the whole Catherian Gambit thing, is there's such a big audience there. Sometimes, all the time, to be honest, when I write, I do like to write for me and feel like I'm doing work that I will be proud of. I don't ultimately sit there and go, right, this work is for a person.
That's like copywriting, isn't it, at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. If you, because I think from, I mean, I did the book with Jay Thorne, the American Demon Hunter book, which recently got a 2-star review, which, although I'm not really fazed by reviews, I think a part of what I took from what the review said was that that one I very much channeled towards writing and tailoring it towards this very specific style for what was a 20,000 word novella. And I love the project, nothing wrong with the project, don't get me wrong, I'm massively proud to be on it, but I think that for that one it was very much I'm not writing Dan, I'm writing Dan for someone else. And I think trying to find that middle ground where you know you're delivering to the right people, but at the same time you're writing it because you enjoy it and because it's for you.
We think the other stories is a good exercise in that, like, you have a theme, you know, sort of the length and, you know, how it ends, the sting at the end or whatever, but at the same time, the best stories I think are when you write them and you're kind of like writing with a cackle, because like you're kind of enjoying them, enjoying the writing so much.
Take this, fuckers. I think I mean both of mine have that common thread of write for you. Because I think that is the thing. You get to a point where if you're not enjoying the writing that you're doing, then what are you doing it for? And sometimes that might mean just taking a step back and having a break. Sometimes that might be changing what you're writing, mixing it up. I feel for me, what I'll be doing into next year is slamming these books, getting these the best that I can be, and then using that to afford the time to write the stuff that I can kind of really get my teeth into and just shake it up and be a bit more experimental with.
Yeah. It's weird. I kind of feel like when I think about the where we as writers were a year ago when we first started the podcast, I feel like we're both now saying it's more important to sort of know who you are and be like self-assured in that, and sort of not let yourself become confused or dazed or like, because there's this whole like gold mine sort of attitude to a lot of it, like on Facebook groups and stuff where they're saying, this is, you know, I made a shit ton of money, this is how I did it, and that's fine, but it doesn't really matter. Like,
yeah.
don't let it sort of get into your mind space and start changing what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've come a fair old way, but I still think that we're kind of on the same wavelength when it comes to the actual writing itself. Again, I feel that even if no opportunity for money ever came, I'd still enjoy writing.
Oh yeah, well, I told Kat many times, like, on my deathbed, I'm fairly sure I'll be writing short stories, because I just really enjoy it as a, like, there's no better experience to me than when you surprise yourself at what you put on the page. When you like look back and go, I don't even know where that came from. Like, it's, and like, something that you personally enjoy. I get the feeling it's a bit like when a painter finishes like a big painting and they look back and are kind of like,
I did that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like you built a project, like you built a car. I imagine it's the same sort of feeling. Like, I kind of feel like nowadays we're more on the sort of creative side of things, but my dad used to build bikes and stuff, and I'm sure, like, he used to just go to the garage after work and he used to just work on bikes and build motorbikes and stuff, and I'm sure he had the same sense of pride and accomplishment and like, did that. I don't know where that came from, but I managed to do it. I'm sure it's the exact same, like, whatever that drug is, that we're getting the same fix on it.
Yeah. I think for an example that I'll use is, like, early this year, I've got next to me on the shelf The Rot, They Remain, Lazarus, and the other stories collections, all next to each other, like a nice big chunky bit on the shelf. And there was a part of me a couple of months ago when we were constantly writing, where I looked at it and I was like, it's not enough. I could do more. I could add two more books to that. Like, that could be so much bigger.
Yeah.
But not at one point did I stop and go, yeah, but last year that shelf was empty.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's that should be maybe the third point for me anyway, is sort of taking a moment every now and again to recognize what you've done. Because it's like so often, like, you just sort of finish and then you're instantly thinking, oh, fuck, I've got to do the next thing now. Like, there's no point do you sort of take that moment to appreciate the painting or the bike you've made or you know, the book you've written.
Or the poop in the bag.
Or the poop. I fucking did that. That and that one.
Yeah.
Big.
But yeah, take that bit back. Because it stinks.
Yeah.
oh my God. People who listen to this show are so crass. But yeah, I get completely what you mean. Because it's so easy to go, like, when you're rolling, like, you can slam out easily 50, 60,000 words a month, no matter who you are, like, as a base. You could, and if you sit there and go, okay, that's what I can do a month, I can do that 12 months. And then 12 months times 60, what's that, like 720,000 words? That's X amount of books, and your head spins. But it's hard to remember to factor in the breaks, to factor in those reflective moments. And
was something I need to get better at. And we used to do we used to celebrate little milestones, and we did this with the other stories. When we hit like a certain download number, we'd like have a shot or like a drink or something. And I feel like nowadays we need to do that more. Like, we publish a new book, it needs to be a bit of a celebration. Maybe if it's something small, like getting a takeaway, like a Domino's mega pizza box or whatever. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, something like a bit of a celebration to appreciate what, take a moment and appreciate what you've done.
We hit 1 million downloads on the Other Stories podcast, and all we did was type in Slack, yay.
Yeah, I know. It'd be nice to sort of...
It's a million fucking downloads on a podcast that we started a year and a half ago.
In fact, like, I guess, you know, that beer I was talking about earlier. So I finished Nano Boozmo and I had that beer, and I just felt completely comfortable in those 20 minutes just to enjoy this beer to myself. I guess that's the kind of moment then, kind of talking about, to sort of take that first drink after the month off or something and just sort of appreciate what it is that you've done, or all those little steps.
yeah, take that step back, appreciate, celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how other people do that, because you don't really often see that on other people's Facebooks or...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like an internal thing that you do, like...
Well, yeah, so I mean, I remember seeing someone... So I've got two examples. I remember, so the Script Notes podcast with John August and Craig Mazin, they used to say when they were struggling screenwriters, now they're kind of big, they write all the Tim Burton films and stuff. But so when they were struggling screenwriters, when they finished the draft of a screenplay, they used to... Have you heard of Panda Express? I think it's like an American Chinese takeaway restaurant type thing.
No.
But he used to say, I used to treat myself by just spending a night eating like a shitload of Panda Express when he finished like a screenplay. And then another example I can think of is, I can't remember what podcast it was, but one of them had different types of beer and spirits and alcohol, and they had like numbers fixed to them. I think we even did this at one point. I remember when we first started. So when they hit a download number, they'd allow themselves to have that drink, like an achievement. Mm. Sort of gamifies it in a way. Also, probably became an alcoholic at some point.
But one keg.
But I do feel, I think I need to do this in personal life as well. Like, I don't celebrate my birthday. I've never really enjoyed it. But I'm 30 in February. Like, I should really like take a moment to do something for that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my last one, I'm torn between two things. One of them is read more, because I've read slightly less this year than I did last year, but then I kind of, last year I did the, I can't remember, the sugar something reading challenge, where it was you had to read certain things in certain genres, you had to go through this list and try and find books that fit. And that's quite a lot of fun to do. But at the same time, I found that when I'm trying to write horror and it's basically saying that one of the categories is you must read romantic fiction, it blurs. Yeah. It doesn't really help your inspiration. But I think I want to go back to paperbacks for a start, because I want that authentic reading experience back. But at the same time, I want to get a lot more into fiction, just find random books, just put the time aside, read it, put the phone in the poop bag and just read a book on the toilet instead, because it's amazing how much just reading can fuel your own writing. And sometimes forget that, because I remember when I first started writing, anytime I was about to start writing, so this was like Sins of Smoke time, anytime I was about to go, right, I'm going to sit down and write, I would read for 5 minutes beforehand and go, okay, this is how the pros do it.
Yeah.
And then write, so that you get that into your head, you get that sort of momentum going.
Yeah.
But also just, I think I am getting a bit angled off towards
non-fiction stuff, or
not so much the non-fiction stuff, but more just the same authors but different works of theirs. Yeah. So I want those different writing styles. I want to see how other people can tell and spin a story.
Yeah.
Because I've got loads of books that I read when I was younger that I know were fantastic when I read them, but in terms of writing styles and that, I have no idea like how they wrote now or what it was that actually got that message across to me.
So how many books do you think you've read this year? Because this year, I always say I'm not a fast reader, but this year I've read so much more than I'd ever really have done before.
It actually says on Goodreads, because I've updated my thing so that any book I read goes on there. I've read 32 books.
Okay, that's a massive amount of books compared to the amount of people who say they write and then sort of never actually read anything.
Yeah, I don't even think this includes like a couple of the audiobooks that I went through, but...
Yeah, exactly. So I'm on track for 50-ish, I think.
Nice.
But, you know, if you're ever behind, just grab a couple of comic book graphic novels, because graphic novels, like, just... You can whiz through those so quick.
That's cheating.
Yeah, I know it is, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think, I put my target on the 2016 reading challenge? Oh, that was a last one. I think this is wrong. Interesting. Hold on. No, that's a whole different thing. Yeah, 32 books. But I put my target for 30. By February I was on like 8, so I should have been set to do a load more, but I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's difficult when you're producing to consume. Like, it feels a little bit weird sometimes when, because like your mindset, because I remember when I was doing NaNoWriMo, like I was struggling to jump into a new book because I was kind of more excited about the story I was writing in my head. Do you know what I mean? More excited about reading. So there's times I was on the bus.
Why isn't this finished so I can read this?
But there's times when I was on the bus, and that's my normal reading time, when I just got my MacBook out and started writing instead. So just sort of, wherever that space is, I was more excited to do that at the time. But yeah, man. So, I mean, what are you, like looking for new authors or something? Or
I mean, I love writing horror.
Yeah.
But it's actually underwhelming how many horror authors I've read.
Okay.
So I've read a buttload of Stephen King. When I was younger, I went through the whole Darren Shan stuff, but it's very like your key players that I go to.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to just find some random horror authors, pick them up, give them a bit of a whack, and see how they go, especially modern horror authors. Because everyone seems to go back to like King, to Barker, to Herbert, and I want to see what maybe indie horror authors are writing these days.
Yeah, I'd be interested to do more of that as well. I think what I'd like to do is do every month do a book of short stories, an indie book, and then I don't know, two, you know, whatever other books. But I was just going to say, it might be worth popping on to, there's a website called horrornovelreviews.com, and they have a list, the 100 scariest novels of all time. Looking at it now, there's a few books here that you would have read anyway, but I've been working off that every now and again, sort of pick a new book to read. Like The Ruins by Scott Smith, which I picked up and read a little while ago. That was one of my favourite reads of the year.
Yeah.
But
oh, I found it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what's going in the indie world. I don't feel like I'm very much in touch with indie horror.
Yeah, we've spoken to a few, but in terms of actually reading them, it's not really something we've done. That's not what I clicked on. But yeah, just, I don't know. There are certain things that when you read Stephen King after Stephen King, he's fantastic, but you get the motifs, you get the tropes, you get the Kingisms where you're just like, oh, I wonder how other people tackle this.
Yeah.
I know that you've just read The Rats by James Herbert. And that one was, when I read that earlier this year, was very, it felt very fresh, felt very young.
His first novel, isn't it, he wrote? And you can tell it's kind of got that energy of the first novel.
And it works, but it is very, very different to King. And I like to kind of see those differences. So, read more. And then my bonus extra, I want to be a bit more giving. I want to find more people to help, more people that I can kind of add value to.
Old ladies help them cross the street and stuff.
Yeah. But I know we were talking about coaching services, things like that. Just reaching out a hand a bit more to people who are maybe a bit earlier on in the game than we are, and to see if we can help them. But I had one experience this year where it was, I can't remember her second name now, it's Karina, who does a lot of our proofreading for the other stories, did a lot of our proofreading for the other stories, was a friend, a colleague of mine at work, who basically got chatting to, found out she wanted to work in publishing. She loves dystopian, she loves horror. So basically just brought her on and said, like, you need experience in order to get into the proofreading copy editing game. And long story short, she came on board, did some proofreading, and now she's working for the publishing company that Stephen King launches his books with. So she's just moved over to Penguin, actually.
Okay. What was the company called?
It was with Hachette.
Been in their offices when I lived in London. They've got the oldest elevator in London. It's like the back far corner. And it doesn't work, but that building used to be one of those newsrooms, and it's got those doors, like revolving doors. So you imagine reporters would kind of burst through these sort of doors with the news stories or something. And then you go in the elevator, and one of those elevators is like old and wooden, and you've got like the thing that you pull across, like concertina door sort of thing. And it just like, if you, that's the amazing thing about London. You go into places like that, and you're like, I'm time traveling. This is insane.
Where did this come from?
Exactly. So me and Ben watched An American Werewolf in London. That came out 80s, I want to say early 80s. But there's a scene in that, in a tube station. And I'm telling you, that tube station is exactly the same. It's like, if you want to go time traveling, just walk around London, because a lot of it is like just like being in like the 70s or something. It's not changed at all.
Yeah. Isn't it like, I can't remember which train station it is, but they've got like a massive staircase that goes down, but they always tell you to wait for these two lifts.
Yeah, that's Leicester Square. What, it's around this, Common Garden, Leicester Square. Don't take the stairs.
I mean, oh, I did once. Most terrifying thing of my life.
Oh, wait, did you go down?
Yeah.
No, so I was going up, and it took me about half an hour to get up the stairs. It takes so long, yeah.
Yeah, I remember just going down and down. And I think at the time there was like a guy that said, don't use the stairs, but I was really in a hurry and just kind of slipped past him.
Yeah.
It goes on forever.
Yeah, the stairs, they're never ending. It feels like you're going to like Wonderland or something.
You get dizzy. It's just just a spiral all the way down.
Yeah. And then you see the rats coming up and you're like, huh? And you got to turn around.
Yeah. But yeah, that's just an extra one of mine, is to give more and try and find more opportunities to help.
Okay, so what was your first one again?
So my first was know your goals.
Know your goals.
Then forget the audience.
Forget the audience.
Read more.
Read more. What were mine? I can't remember. Number one was...
It was along the lines of know your goals. It was...
something like that, wasn't it? Yeah. Become... it's the same sort of idea, I think. Know thyself or something, know your why.
Yeah.
Number two was work at your own pace.
Yeah.
But work. I think that's the key point there. So work at your own pace, but work, like get something done.
Yeah.
And number three is can't remember.
Oh, this was only moments ago.
Literally moments ago. That's where we're at. It's 8 o'clock. Any bedtime.
Oh, celebrate your wins.
Celebrate your wins. That's fun. Okay, cool. That's pretty good. We're coming on to the hour. That was that was a nice way to do an episode, I think. It was quite interesting.
Yeah. I think put each other on the spot just a little bit.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think.
Talking about being put on the spot, what's the outro? Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to Disasterpiece for the intro and outro music. Thanks Patreon. To the Patreon patrons over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. If you like the show, head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. And I think that's about it. Thanks to Dan.
So much effort on your face. Thank
you very much. Cool. Yeah. All right. See you in a bit.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.